here we go, folks. Pro Football Ireland's first podcast since the Super Bowl. It's been a nice break. There's been a few things that have happened in the NFL world, and it's great to have you back on the airwaves again. And I tell you what, we have the honour of extending a heartfelt welcome to a guy, a living legend, an icon whose name is synonymous with fans of the sport across the island of Ireland. From Mississippi to the hallowed halls of Lambeau Field, our guest has had an amazing journey down through the years. A man for over 16 incredible seasons, captivated fans at the time with his cannon arm, fearless demeanour and uncanny ability to orchestrate unforgettable moments on the field, from 3 MVP awards to a Super Bowl victory in 1997. It was a career to remember. It's an honour to welcome Brett Favre to Pro Football Ireland. Brett Favre, welcome. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me. Thanks for that wonderful introduction. I need to have you travel with me.
We can definitely work that out. Usually, obviously, a very, very warm welcome to you, Brett. It's fantastic to have you on. And we usually ask guests if they have any, you know, family connection or heritage to the island of Ireland. But we believe also, if you feel free to answer that, but we also believe that you were here, I think, last year. Am I correct?
I was there in July. Correct. I think we landed July 16th and spent right about 10 days. And there was four couples, some dear friends of ours. And as we were talking prior to the show, our parish priest here in Mississippi, in Hattiesburg, where I live, is Tommy Conway. And he is, I dare say, dear friend, because he's more like family. We've been with him for, oh gosh, over 20 years. He built a new parish church here in West Hattiesburg. And he's from just outside of Galway. And all his family lives back there in the same area in which he grew up in. So we've been there twice, most recently this past summer, and then five years before that we were there as well. And I tell you, what a wonderful trip. What a beautiful, beautiful place. I was in awe. It was beautiful. People were fantastic.
Yeah, it sounds like we need to get Tommy on the podcast. I don't know how a man from Galway ends up all the way in Mississippi in the church out there. I'd say he is a tell for us or two. But you're right, Galway is one of the beautiful parts of the country. Obviously, anyone that listens to us with James Cahill knows we're mad about Galway on this podcast. But there was images of you in a pub that was halfway between Galway and Roscommon, for people that didn't know about it, right? And in this pub, if you remember, all that it is on the outside is a petrol pump. That's all that's in the town. Do you know the one that I'm talking about? It's called Shaveen Pub. There's pictures of you behind the bar pouring your own Guinness.
I'll say this. I'm not a drinker. I was at one point.
Yeah.
I drank too much. But we went in a lot of pubs. I was the only one. I drank one Guinness. I haven't drank since 1998, by the way. So fast forward to this summer. You know, right about 25 years. I think, if I do my math right. So we have our big group. We're at a table. We're eating and everyone's drinking. Father Tommy would not let anyone drink anything other than Guinness.
Good man, Tommy.
And I said, Father Tommy always asked me separately, what do you want to drink? And I said, I think I'm going to have a Guinness. And his chin hit the floor. He said, no way. I said, look, I'm in Ireland. Everyone drinks Guinness. I don't foresee any problems. I don't foresee me taking on drinking again. I've got to drink one glass of Guinness. So I did. And I have to admit, I like lemonade a little better.
Oh, no.
No offense. I haven't drank a beer in a long time, but I said, if you're in Ireland, you have to have a Guinness. It was a little strong and a little thick for me, from what I remember from beer way back in the day. But to answer your question, we were in a lot of pubs. For me, for a non-drinker, it's not the most fun thing to do, hang out in a pub and not drink. But we went all over the place. Now, we stayed one night just outside of Dublin. I can't remember the name. It was a beautiful place. And then we went to Kilkenny, which is which is the place we went to prior 5 years ago. We stayed maybe 3 days in Kilkenny, walked the streets, you know, just enjoyed seeing the churches and castles. And then we went to this trip. We went to Galway and spent 3 days there, maybe 4 days, and just kind of traveled around out and saw the countryside. We spent a full day in the Wicklow Mountains, did a beautiful hike. That was fantastic. Man, that was breathtaking. The views were just unbelievable. And that was kind of our whole trip. I mean, we didn't bring our golf clubs. We just saw the countryside. And the first trip, now that was 5 years ago, we went to the same that I just mentioned, except we went to, we spent a day or two in Westport. And we climbed, I'm drawing a blank here, the tallest mountain in Ireland.
The McGillicuddy-Reeks in Kerry would be the tallest one, but is it the pilgrimage that you did?
No, it was...
It's not Kirkpatrick?
Yeah, yes.
Kirkpatrick?
Yes, that's
there
what,
we go.
Yeah.
There we go.
And that what was really neat about that was that the fog or the mist was, you know, down below the mountain. So you couldn't see. It was like going into the unknown. And then the little church is up there at the top. And then when we got to the top, went into church, and we came out, the mist had lifted, and you could see the harbor. Just a fantastic trip, both times. And the other thing that we did the first trip was we stopped in Knock. And I think the Pope had either just came or was about to come the following week. That was a neat experience.
Jeez, God bless your geography understanding there, Brad. I think you've seen more of Ireland than a lot of people have, but it is one of those things. And just because, look, Paddy's Day was here last week, I'm surprised. Do you normally golf? Have you golfed before in Ireland?
We golfed 9 holes this past trip. We rented clubs and we just said, look, kind of like drinking a Guinness. If you're in Ireland, you got to play a hole at least. So me and my three buddies, we rented some clubs and went and played 9 holes. And every golf course you pass by in Ireland, the thing about Ireland, I tell people that haven't been, is it truly is green. It is beautiful. And I don't know if it's like that year round, but I particularly like the weather in Ireland. I would take 50s and 60s year round as opposed to sweltering heat and humidity that we get here. And it makes for a beautiful country because it's lush, green. It's like I explained it to people. It was like taking a step back in time because a lot of the buildings, the churches, the castles, look just like they did when they were built, you know, hundreds and maybe even 1,000 years ago. That is not the case in the United States.
It's funny because it's our first podcast from the Super Bowl for us, Brett, and like you're talking about the green there. Like I remember after being in Vegas for like 10 days, just going from New York back home and coming in to Dublin and seeing the green and just feeling a lot more at ease. So
feeling good about where you're going back to. Yeah, Vegas is dry, brown,
expensive.
What grass they
have. Extremely expensive.
I didn't go anywhere near Vegas. I stayed way, way, way away.
You won't catch me back there again, so you won't.
Oh, here. I was going to say, we'll talk about football in 2 seconds. I'm going to very quickly just remark on what Mark said about that photo in the Guinness. The one thing that I got, Brett, I think it was at my in-laws in the countryside, and I seen the photo or Instagram story, and it was in that pub. I'll go in a different way, in an Irish sporting way. There was either Gaelic football or hurling on the television. It's a Sunday game. Did you catch any of the game over here, or did you see any of our sports when you were over?
Yes. It's funny, both times that we went to Ireland, the hurling championship was being played while we were there. So obviously the first time I set foot in Ireland, I'd never heard of hurling. And Father Tommy explained it very well, talked about in depth about like how the players have regular jobs. They don't make money like professional sports do over here. And I thought that was really a neat thing. And what was even more amazing to me was that game, there's 70, 80,000 people fighting to get in that stadium. You know, I mean, how passionate the fans are about their sport. It was really incredible. So I learned a little bit the first trip about it and kind of got the second course, the second go around. But it was neat. It was really cool to watch. I mean, you get used to your deal, your sport, your country, your state, whatever. And you kind of get in this little bubble, and getting out of it and seeing the world in a different way was really neat.
Hurling is definitely one of the more unique sports, but you alluded there, you might have seen the Gaelic football, which is the one that's kind of like soccer with your hands. So you might be interested to know that just at the combine just gone by, the NFL, for lack of a better word, poached four of Ireland's best players and is trying to turn them in to kickers. Well, three from GA and one from rugby. So they're at the NFL combine. And then as we record this, it's 2 days since they had their own pro day. It was in Florida State, wasn't it, Michael?
Somewhere in Tampa, yeah.
Yeah. So the NFL is looking to get some of our sports people to go and become kickers over there because, Rory Began, one of the most recognizable names, again, because he's an amateur, he doesn't get paid to do Gaelic games. He can go over and sign to a roster, practice squad, for hundreds of thousands of dollars. So it's very, you know, appealing to him. He was nailing 60-yard kicks at his pro day.
Well, you know, it's funny because the NFL, I played 20 years. And when I was playing, off the top of my head, I can't think of a foreign kicker or a rugby, soccer, Gaelic football. I can't remember there ever being that type of player or kicker. But I often wondered why the NFL would not go and at least give it a try, because, you know, soccer players outside of the States can kick. Now, can they make field goals? Give them a try. Anybody that can kick the ball 60, 70 yards deserves a shot. And so I think it's a neat thing that the NFL is branching out, and which is a smart thing to do. I mean, who cares where they're from? If they can play or kick or tackle or score touchdowns, so be it. So I think that's really neat.
I'll text you some video of these guys after this call. I have to stay on the combine 2 seconds. I seen a picture of you at your combine a few years ago now, Brett. What's your thoughts on a lot of these guys now? I'll not name names going into this draft. Some of them don't see the want or need to go to the combine, and they have maybe their own pro days, or they really dictate. It's really changed from whenever you were entering the process. Have you any thoughts on that yourself?
Yeah, I'm old school. You know, I mean, I have a hard time accepting the new game. And I suppose it's like when you're growing up and your parents tell you things, like you don't know what it's like. You know, I used to go to a movie and it cost me a nickel, you know, and you're like, well, times have changed. I guess that's sort of the way things is at this point in the NFL, and quite frankly, in our country. It's a different game. It's a different life. But again, I was old school. When I was invited to the combine, I considered that a great honor. And that was my chance, aside from my playing for my college team, that was my chance to go with the best of the best and perform and see how I size up and match up against those guys. And I thought that evened the playing field, so to speak. So a guy from the smallest college or from Ireland or from wherever could match up against the best of the best, the one that got all the attention, that was on TV every week. And you see how you match up. So I don't particularly like the fact that players, college players invited to the combine, choose to not perform. Now, if they're hurt, they're hurt. That I understand that. But otherwise, go compete and give it your best shot. But again, it's different today.
I had to ask you about that, but we will. I know there's a lot of Packers fans listening to this. We'll talk about your career. I was looking through your CV, but I know one of the greatest to ever do it, but even I was going like, This is insane. I mean, like, let's start in Green Bay, right? If you look back now on your career in Green Bay, you know, what was it like playing for the Packers and building such a strong rapport with the fans? Because we had Sean Clifford, the backup quarterback to Jordan Love, on our show on Radio Row, and he just talked about the fans and just how into it they really are. We've seen it firsthand in London a couple of years ago when the Packers went international for the first time ever. What was it like being a Green Bay Packer?
It's hard to put into words. It was absolutely amazing. I had two goals growing up, and there was no plan C. There was a plan A and a plan B. My dad was a football coach and a baseball coach. And I knew from day one, as far back as I can remember, I don't know what age that was, 5, 6, I wanted to be a pro football player or a Major League Baseball player. And I played both. And that was it. I never dreamed of the alternative. So first and foremost, to get an opportunity to play in the NFL, period, with anyone, was a dream come true. Did I ever think I would play in Green Bay? No. Growing up, my favorite team was the Dallas Cowboys. So, I dreamed of playing with the Dallas Cowboys. But first, how many young kids who have the dreams that I had actually get a chance to fulfill those dreams? Very few. So the fact that I got to play, period, was just a great honor. Then I get traded from Atlanta to Green Bay, and I remember the media asking me about Green Bay, if I knew where it was, and I said, no, but I know it's up north. I knew it was cold. I knew that great players had played there over the history of the franchise. And little did I know, it was the perfect fit at the perfect time, because the Packers had been down for quite some time, 25 years, in fact, since they had made the playoffs. So they were starving for success. You know, they were living off 25 years ago. But when I got to the town, I was really shocked, because it was smaller than where I lived. And Hattiesburg was about 70,000 people in 1992. And so I'm thinking, how do you have an NFL franchise in this small town? And the biggest thing in town is Lambeau Field. So, when I ended up getting a chance to play, it was pretty at times, ugly at other times. But the fans, if you drive around Wisconsin and you go in Green Bay, you realize that they're blue collar, they're hardworking, they're farmers. You know, they or mechanics, you know, whatever. I mean, it's just blue collar. It's not a big city. There's not traffic. You know, there's not, you know, a huge amount of restaurants like you would have in New York and Broadway shows and things like that. There's football. And so when you watch the television at night and you turn on the news, they usually start with what's up with the Packers. And they end the latest with the Packers. I mean, it's so for me, and I can't express this enough, for me, that was okay. Some guys are like, you know, I just want a break from football. I want to go, to a nice restaurant where people don't bother me. For me, it was different. I was there to play football. And so, I'll consider myself blue collar. I grew up, my mom and dad were school teachers. You know, I had two brothers and a sister. My mom and dad didn't make very much money. You know, we ate good. We had clothes. We played ball. That was it. And so for me, it was a dream come true, because all I wanted to do was run out of the tunnel and throw touchdown passes and win games. And I got to do that. And so the relationship between me and the fans, again, they were starving for a winner, because it had been so long. And I happened to step in at the right time and the good Lord was looking after me and was with me, because there was plenty of times I could have failed and been gone. But I was able to fight through a lot of things and challenges. And the fans, I was always open and honest with the fans and was willing to let them into my life. And I think that they appreciated that and appreciated the way I played. Because it wasn't always pretty, but it was the best I could possibly do.
Yeah, and I suppose it's so intriguing listening to you there, because you've sold me on Green Bay. I've always wanted to go, but, you know, it sounds like my kind of town, especially like you're saying that it's very football orientated in that. But how much pride then, and you said you couldn't put the last answer into words, maybe this one's even more difficult, but to go to a franchise that was down in its luck, somewhere that you connected with so perfectly, to now be known as one of the greats, one of the faces of the franchises, along with your Vince Lombardi's, to deliver them that Super Bowl when you did, what does that mean? Like, you know, to this day, can you understand what you delivered for yourself personally, but also for all those fans?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And I've been asked similar questions over the years. And, you know, it's funny. I think I'll go the rest of my life and not have a true feeling of what that meant. And that may sound strange or weird, but I think it was that big. It was that important to the fans in the state of Wisconsin to bring, you know, the Lombardi Trophy back. It's funny how the trophy is named after the guy who really kind of paved the way for Packer football to be what it is today. I mean, if you can think, I often would think about, even when I was playing, and certainly after my career was over, I thought about what it was like when they started the Packer franchise. How many people thought, you got to be out of your damn mind. In Green Bay, are you kidding me? But look where it is today. When I got to Green Bay in 1992, there was a 20-year waiting list, if I remember correctly, for a season ticket. 20 years. I thought, you have got to be kidding me. That is unbelievable. I think it's somewhere around 120 years now for a season ticket. So we ain't going to see that. The next generation may see it. The third generation is the one who's going to get the ticket. To me, that is absolutely amazing that you have a stadium that holds 80,000 and you got a 120-year waiting list for a season ticket. You know, where on earth does that happen? You would think certainly not in a town that has 70 to maybe 100,000 people, but that's where it is.
Brett, I was watching a video earlier on about that legendary game you had in Oakland the day after, your dad had passed away. You looked like a guy that was just on the form of his life that night. Like, just incredible. Like, from what I've seen, was it 399 yards, 22 of 30? It's like, and that's something now that we don't even see now. We don't see games in Oakland anymore. Not just that game, Brett, there was games in your career where, outside of the Super Bowl, where you just turned it on and went to a level that we just don't really see from many players anymore. How do you get to that level? What's the secret?
With the Oakland game, the secret was Jesus Christ. I prayed and prayed and prayed. I had a lot of time to think about it because we were there 2 days in advance. It was a long trip, so we went 2 days ahead. So when I got the news my father passed, my wife, Deanna, flew out from Green Bay to be with me. And it was a night game on Monday, so I actually got the news Saturday afternoon. So I had 2 days to sort of think about it. And the part of me playing in the game, there was a lot of speculation whether or not I would play. That was never a doubt. Internally, within the team, inside that hotel, they knew I was going to play. I knew I was going to play. Did I think it was going to be tough? Yes. But I wanted to honor my father more than anything I'd ever done in my life. And this was the only chance that I was going to get to honor my father in a situation, in the circumstances like they were. This was it. This was the Super Bowl. So you can imagine the enormous amount of pressure that I had really self-induced, had placed upon myself to perform at such a high level. Because playing, and even if I played and we won the game, and I did play very well, but we won the game, people would be, well, you know, what do you expect? Because Dad died. At least he played, you know, one of those things. But that was certainly not in my thinking. I wanted to play better than I'd ever played before. So when I prayed, you know, God, please, you know, be on my shoulder the whole time and guide me through, because I want to do something that I've never done before. And lo and behold, I did. At halftime, my stats were better at halftime than any four-quarter game that I'd had previous to that. And I played a lot of games. So when I walked in that locker room at halftime, it was obvious we were going to win the game at that point. We kind of ran away with it. But I was like, I was 100% aware of what had just happened in those two quarters. And I would be a fool to get in front of the press afterwards and say that was because of me, because it wasn't. I mean, that, and I said this in the interview on the field after the game, divine intervention was at its best, right? You know, and for anybody who ever doubted God, there was a sure sign right there on that field.
I would say for any listeners or anyone watching this that is new into the NFL to watch that game in 2003. And that's all I'll say on that. I think it's an incredible answer there, Brad. Just very quickly for myself, and Mark's got a couple just to finish. Jordan Love seems like a cool guy in person. What's your thoughts of him? Like, he really exceeded expectations first year as a starter, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, I mean, everyone forgets that he's, you know, in year four or five, somewhere around there, maybe even six going into next year. So it's not, and I say that in a good way, because he's had a chance to learn. Obviously, Aaron Rodgers, one of the best to ever play, so he got to learn from a really good player. But, you know, I think we got to see the real Jordan Love, and what I really like about him is down the, you know, he had his ups and downs, as you would expect, as the team had. There was some times where you said they're not even going to come close to the playoffs. And then all of a sudden they caught fire towards the end and started winning games. And that's when Jordan Love, to me, really showed. And I don't really necessarily look at the playmaking ability, even though that's important. I look at how the team rallies around him, how they seem like they loved him, seem like they wanted to win for him. And to me, the mark of a really great player is when you can elevate your team to a level that maybe they're not normally capable of. And that seemed to be what happened down the stretch. So I was very impressed with him and how he played the whole year, and the composure and the poise that he had. He never seemed to be too high, never seemed to be too low. You know, where if you watch me play, I'm running around the field hooting and hollering and going crazy. And I think that's good. But I think the even keel, where you're not too high and not too low, if I'm a head coach, I sort of like that. You know, he'd be a good poker player. You know, he's not showing his hand. So I was very impressed with
him. You know, it's really interesting. You have such a, I suppose there's a gene there, is it? Or like the family tie that went Favre to Rodgers to Love. Like, you're still so connected with the team. Unlike a lot of teams have, like, I'm a Cardinals fan, there's been umpteenth quarterbacks in the last 10 years alone. But we saw in the last handful of years, Davante Adams went, then Aaron Rodgers went, now Aaron Jones is gone. Is there kind of a changing in the vibe around Green Bay that it's, you know, it is expanding again, it's not doing things the same way, and maybe as, like, fans, you can't enjoy it as much because, you know, that team and that atmosphere and that loyalty that you follow, that you're all this family and it's been going on and on and on for a while, that there's not the loyalty to the players anymore. It's kind of tough to watch that.
Well, it's really the nature of the National Football League today. You know, there was a time when I was playing, especially early in my career, and certainly when I was a kid watching, For example, the Dallas Cowboys, my favorite team. Every year for probably 8 years, the same players were on that team. And I can name every one of them from one position to the next. Today, you can't do that with any team. There's no loyalty from the team. And in some cases, there's no loyalty from the player because as soon as they can leave and they want to leave, they leave. And you're even seeing it in college sports now here in the States. No loyalty. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier about I don't know if the older generation is that accepting of the change because you have your favorite team like I did growing up, but really – is sort of your favorite players. So if it's a revolving door, which it is now, you're really not loyal to the players. You're loyal to that team. Or you uncheck that box and you go on to another team and follow your favorite player, you know. I don't particularly like it, but it's the nature of the way the game is today.
Probably been unbelievably generous with your time. I've got one final question and we'll let you go and not drink Guinness but drink lemonade instead. Aaron Rodgers done something very similar to you, went to New York, albeit different directions, etc. I was gutted for him last year when he went down so early into the season. What's your expectations for the Jets this season? Are you
well? I think with barring an injury, I think that the future looks bright for the Jets. I mean, they have a tremendous defense. People don't know a lot about them because they don't win games. And so they're not on, the primetime TV. So you don't know how good they are. They just have not had a quarterback. And that is a huge difference. I mean, the vision is very winnable or competable for the Jets if they have a quarterback. And I got to believe if Aaron's healthy, whether you like him or not, he gives them a great opportunity to win. And again, if he stays healthy and plays even remotely close to what he normally plays at, they should be competing for their conference championship.
Brett, there are thousands of Packers fans, so many in Ireland as well. I want to give a shout out to Derek Harger from Cullyhanna, who was going to be here, big Packers fan. He's devastated he's not. He says hello to you and the UK and Irish Packers fans as well for this and everyone that listens to this podcast. Brett, as we say in Ireland, Gourmet Me Mugget, thank you so much. And I feel like we could have done this for 3 or 4 hours, Brett. That's how good that was. Thank you so much, man.
Well, hey, thanks for having me on, guys. I was honored. Thank you.